Nityananda Ram Jaya 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 Radha Vrindavan Chandra Radha Vrindavan Chandra Radha Jaya Prabhupada Jaya Prabhupada Jaya Prabhupada Jaya Prabhupada Jaya Jaya Guru Dev Guru Dev Guru Dev Jaya Jaya Guru Dev Shrupad Varmahamsa Parvrakacharya Stotarasata Sri Srimad Isri Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jaya Ananta Koti Vaisnavinda Ki Jaya Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jaya Prem Sikaho Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivastadi Gaur Bhaktivinda Ki Jaya Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopina Shyama Kunda Radha Kunda Gita Govardhan Gita Vrindavan Dham Gita Navadvip Dham Gita Gangamaya Gita Jamunamaya Gita Tulsi Devi Gita Bhakti Devi Gita Samaveda Bhakti Gita Gita Shri Nityananda Ram Gita Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, ki jai, Gaur Premananda. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Sri Guru. Tadamandasya ganadarasalakaya chakshunam nalitam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. This is the second verse from the fifth chapter of Adi Lila, which is the chapter chiefly devoted to describing the essential nature and glories of Sri Nityananda Prabhu, whose most auspicious appearance in this world we're celebrating and observing today. Read a few verses from this important chapter of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. Let me offer my obeisances to Lord Sri Nityananda, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose opulence is wonderful and unlimited. By His will, even a fool can understand His identity. And then this verse, Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhaktivinoda. Next verse, I have described the glory of Sri Chaitanya in 6 verses. Now in 5 verses, I shall describe the glory of Lord Nityananda. So, read those 5 verses, which are the essence of this 5th chapter. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is the fountainhead of all incarnations. Lord Balaram is his second body. They are both one and the same identity. They differ only in form. He is the first bodily expansion of Krishna, and he assists in Lord Krishna's transcendental pastimes. That original Lord Sri Krishna appeared in Navadvip as Sri Chaitanya, and Balaram appeared with him as Lord Nityananda. May Sri Nityananda Ram be the object of my constant remembrance. Sankarshan, Sheshanag, and the Vishnus who lie on the Karana ocean, Garba ocean, and the ocean of milk are his plenary portions and the portions of his plenary portions. Purport by his divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Sri Sarup Damodar Goswami has recorded this verse in his diary to offer his respectful obeisances to Lord Nityananda Prabhu. This verse also appears as the seventh of the first 14 verses of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. And then one more verse in which Srila Prabhupada gives the ontological position of Lord Nityananda Ram. Translation, the 10th verse. He executes the orders of Lord Krishna in the work of creation, and in the form of Lord Shesh, he serves Lord Krishna in various ways, purport by his divine grace. According to expert opinion, Balaram, as the chief of the original quadruple forms, is also the original Sankarshan. Balaram, the first expansion of Krishna, also expands himself in five forms: Mahasankarshan, Karna Vishayi, Garbhadakshayi, Chirodakshayi, and Shesh. These five plenary portions are responsible for both the spiritual and material cosmic manifestations. In these five forms, Lord Balaram assists Lord Krishna in his activities. The first four of these forms are responsible for the cosmic manifestation, whereas Shesh is responsible for personal service to the Lord. Shesh is called Ananta, or unlimited, because he assists the personality of Godhead in his unlimited expansions by performing an unlimited variety of services. Sri Balaram is the servitor Godhead who serves Lord Krishna in all affairs of existence and knowledge. Lord Nityananda Prabhu, who is the same servitor Godhead Balaram, performs the same service to Lord Gauranga by constant association. This verse explains how the various features, the expansions and the portions and the portions of the planetary portions of Lord Nityananda Rao are responsible for all affairs of both the cosmic manifestation and the spiritual. And he assists Lord Krishna in all phases and all aspects of existence. And because he is the most perfect servitor of Godhead, he is Godhead. But Krishna and Balaram are the same personalities, the only difference being bodily complexion and identity. One as the Lord who is to be served, Sri Krishna. One who is that same Lord who serves Sri Krishna, this Balaram. And in Gaur Lila, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu being the combined form of Radha and Krishna. Lord Nityananda, or Lord Balaram, becomes Sri Nityananda Ram to serve Lord Gauranga. or Gauranga being the combined form of Radha and Krishna, Lord Nityananda, the servitor Godhead, to that golden avatar. Srila Prabhupada would become very moved, very emotional, very ecstatic, hearing the songs of Lochan Das Thakur, the author of Sri Chaitanya Manga, who felt that in that illustrious biography of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he had not sufficiently glorified Lord Nityananda, and therefore composed a series of songs strictly dedicated to the glories of Lord Nityananda. And Srila Prabhupada, I would say more than any other event, would become, you know, Srila Prabhupada was very cautious and restrained in terms of expressing ecstatic emotion in love of Godhead. Because this being the Kali Yuga, people so attracted to hypocrisy and cheating and imitation, he would not give opportunity for such misconceptions. But hearing the songs of Lochan Das Thakur, Srila Prabhupada would just become too much moved. He would have to very forcibly, and even then, was unable to really conceal his emotion. And in the songs of Narottam Das Thakur, who gives the deepest essence of Gaudiya Vaishnava Siddhanta in most simple and sweet verses of his beautiful, inspiring, moving bhajans, explains that the lotus feet of Lord Nityananda are the only shelter where one can get the soothing moonlight of not only one moon or two, but millions and millions of moons. And if one desires to have peace, which is actually the deepest desire of all living entities, we just want peace, then he has to take shelter of Lord Nityananda in the shade of his lotus feet. And if one desires to attain the lotus feet of Radha and Krishna and enter into the dance of the spiritual world inspired by their divine love, there is no means other than the lotus feet of Lord Nityananda and his mercy. Which means, in a more elaborate way, that we cannot attain the shelter of the lotus feet of Lord Gauranga without the mercy of Lord Nityananda. And of course, we cannot attain the mercy of Lord Nityananda without his most merciful representative, his divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, and those who are representing him by their service in this world. So, along with being responsible for all phases of existence, Lord Nityananda enters into all phases of existence and teaches the purpose of all existence, which is to serve Krishna by his personal example, his preaching, his words. And thus he is glorified. He is the original spiritual master in four of the five primary rasas, excluding Madhurya, in which Srimati Radharani is the original guru. And Lord Nityananda also instructs that realm of Madhurya through his Shakti, Ananda Manjari, who is Janava Devi and Vishuddha, his two consorts in Gaurlila. And Srimati Radharani, the goddess of devotion, the queen of Vrindavan, will not take anyone's approach to Goloka seriously unless they are approved by Lord Nityananda and his representatives, our illustrious spiritual masters. Nityananda means eternally infused, infused with eternal ananda, the ananda of service. And as Balaram, whose position is to be appreciated by his emblems of the plow and the club, the plow is a universal emblem, revered as a sacrament for its utility in the sacred service of plowing, which is prerequisite to making the earth fertile. So that plow is an emblem of the supreme transcendent male, the intercessor between heaven and earth, the spiritual and material creations, who, by his plow, takes possession and makes fertile the virgin earth. So that plow is the emblem of the transcendent male, which is active. And the furrow represents the female, the receptive, which receives the seed, ultimately the seed of devotional service, and nurtures that seed to its fruition. And its fruition being the birth of Krishna consciousness in our own hearts. And therefore we find that Sita Thakurani appeared from a furrow, being plowed by the emperor who represents that supreme Balaram. And in other millenniums, Srimati Radharani also, in the furrow plowed by King Vrishabhanu, made her appearance in this world. So the harvest of this process of cultivation represented by that plow is bhakti. But bhakti was not very prominent in Radhadesh, because that's the land where the Ganges does not flow and is considered inauspicious. Being bereft of that flow of the current of mercy, the holy Ganges. But the appearance of Lord Nityananda opened the floodgates to a flow of compassion surpassing even that of the holy Ganges. And when he made his appearance on this very auspicious day, which became more auspicious with his appearance, that previously considered land of Radhadesh, bereft of the flow of the Ganges, became inundated with a mood of goodwill, and all ill will, and bad temper, and famine, and poverty, and inauspiciousness just dissipated with the appearance of Lord Nityananda to Hudai Pandit, an illustrious Brahmin who hailed from Mithila, and his consort, Padmavati. When Lord Nityananda appeared in Ekachakra, or rather, conversely, when Lord Gauranga, 12 years later, appeared in Navadvip, Lord Nityananda let out a roar. He was so ecstatic, he roared so loudly that roar resounded throughout all the material and spiritual creations. And people were wondering, what is transpiring here? He was so happy that his Lord had taken birth in Gauradesh. So, from the time of his birth, just as a baby and a young child, Lord Nityananda was constantly consistent with his feature as Shesh, who holds the unlimited material cosmos. All the material worlds are resting upon one of his hoods, while the other unlimited hoods are, with his unlimited mouths, forever glorifying Krishna. But he never reaches the end of even one day's pastimes. But he continues eternally glorifying his Lord Sri Krishna. So Nithai, as a child, was constantly engaged in leading his village friends in enacting the pastimes of Krishna under his direction. One boy would take the role of the ailing Mother Earth and pray to the demigods. And the demigods, the other boys, would come as demigods and lead Bhumi to the shore of the river, which was the causal ocean. And they would pray to Mahavishnu to relieve the plight of the earth. And another boy, hiding behind a rock, would say, "Very soon I will descend to relieve the burden of the earth. I will take birth in Mathura." So then, very quickly, the boys changed their stage props, and they used mainly reeds that grew in the bank of the river, and they made a prison. And they enacted, under Nitai's expert supervision, first the marriage of Vasudeva and Devaki, and then in the prison, Krishna taking birth and being transferred to their little makeshift Gokul, where Subhadra was taken back to Mathura and put in the prison, and then Kamsa, and then Durga, and the pastimes were enacted so precisely. And then when Kamsa found out, because one of the boys put on a little fake beard and went and told him, Kamsa, that as Narada, the child who was prophesied to kill you is already born. And then he was getting reports from his spies that Nanda Maharaj gave birth to a child the same night that Durga appeared to you and told you the prophecy. So then the boys had to start making all kinds of demons, beginning with Putana. And then Krishna would smash the demon into shreds. And at the end of the day's pastimes, the parents would hear, because their children wouldn't come home for lunch, they wouldn't come for anything. But at the end of the day, their parents would hear celebrations and blowing of buffalo horns and chantings of Jai, Jai. And they would know that whatever demon appeared that day had just been annihilated. And the boys would come home just so happy, having all day been immersed in the pastimes of Krishna, in the association of Nithai. And then he was the best of the butter thieves. He would steal butter from all the houses in Ekachakra. And all the cowherd men, Ekachakra to this day has the most beautiful cows. In fact, Ekachakra hasn't really changed much in the past 500 years. They have a bhav there. They don't talk about Nithai in the past tense. One thing that always touched me is their deities of Nithai and Gaur. They're different, you know, Nithai is begging and Gaur is giving. But Nithai is always a little bit bigger than Gaur. So I asked one of the Murtiwalas, can you make a set of deities where they're the same height? Because usually we worship Nithai and Gaur forms it. And he goes, "What are you talking? He's big brother." I said, "Well, yeah, I know that, but in our..." Whenever I said, all he could say is, "He's big brother." And then I realized that he's big brother. And we should not minimize their... It's real. It's a real bhav that is still prominent today. Like, he's just... He never left. Which, in an aprakat sense, is true and real. So anyway, the cowherd men in Ekachakra, they would always put aside extra butter and watch, because they knew the thief was going to come and take the butter. And why were they so eager? There's symbolism here. Stealing that butter means stealing our hearts. And then when Indra became enraged at the Brijabasis for denying him his sacrifice, they enacted the lifting of Govardhan Hill. And then when Akrura came to take Krishna to Mathura, Nitai, who was playing the gopis at that time, cried with such emotion that people began to suspect this is not some play. He was feeling a separation from Krishna that was, it was not imitation, it was not play, it was not reenactment of something in the past. He was actually experiencing. And then of course one of the most convincing and absorbing was Ram Lila, in which Nitai would be Lakshman. Now you know, in Ram Lila, Lakshman, he gave up eating and sleeping and everything for the service of Ram, and he always thought that his service was insufficient. And there was so much ordeal and suffering in the pastimes of Lord Ram, the epitome of which was when, after all that ordeal in the forest and all those attacks by the Rakshasas and all the anguish in that battle, when so many monkey chieftains were just devoured by Kumbhakarna and met a horrible death, and finally, after so much suffering and ordeal, Sita was returned to Ram. And when she came before him, he didn't even seem to be pleased. And he actually said it. Don't think I'm pleased to have you back after residing in the house of another. I simply had you rescued for the sake of Dharma. And I won't take you back. Because controversy surrounds you now, just like smoke circling a fire. And I will not take you back in my house. And then Sita Thakurani, her eyes just like, she became so fiery as Kshatriya princess that she was. She said, was it my fault? My frailty? I was abducted by the force of that powerful Rakshasa? Kidnapped? You question my chastity in his dungeon? Then let fire, let the funeral pyre bear witness to my chastity. And she turned to Lakshman and told him, gather logs and ignite the funeral pyre. And Lakshman turned to Ram thinking that surely he's going to say, don't do it. He didn't say anything. He just indicated, yes. And Lakshman had to perform that function, which to his eternal form of bliss was simply unbearable. Lord Chaitanya glorified Nityananda, your form is bliss. Your activities are bliss. Everything about you is Ananda. But in the form of Lakshman, he found that service to be utterly unbearable. And until then, he had always served the Lord as his big brother. But as he set fire to that funeral pyre, and amidst cries of grief from throughout the creation, he vowed then and there that he would never again be the Lord's big brother. I mean, little brother. He was little brother from up until that time. In all the appearances of the Lord, he was little brother. And he had to be a servant. He had to do what he was told. And in that moment, he vowed to himself he would never again be the little brother and have to take such instructions as a servant. Thereafter, he became big brother, Lord Nityananda. First, Balaram, who had the additional service of protector to Krishna. And then, as Lord Nityananda, who took birth about 12 years before Mahaprabhu made his advent. So he was big brother. And if you ever go to Ekachakra, just ask for deities of Nitai Gaur that are the same size, and you'll find out that he's eternally big brother. But anyway, in Ram Lila, you know, he did really good as the gopis at instilling this idea that this is not some play. They're actually participating in this Leela. And in Ram Leela, that feeling was endorsed all the more. It was so convincing. And there again, every day they'd be enacting the pastimes of Ram during the Ram Leela phase. And then when Lakshman had to confront Ravana himself after all the preceding ordeals, and Ravana challenged him, "I am that mighty Ravana, stop me if you can." And the playmate, Lord Nityananda's playmate, who was serving as Ravana, took a lotus and he very gently threw it, and it touched Lord Nityananda on the heart. And seeing that as the empowered missile of Ravana, he fell down motionless in the dust. And when Nitai fell down and all symptoms of life were suspended, the cries from his friends rose like no cries that they had ever heard before. And all the parents from all the homes, they came running to see what is the source of such grief in the childhood home of Nityananda, eternal bliss. And they saw him lying in the dust, motionless. And the cries of the children merged with the cries of the parents. And everyone was just stunned in grief and disbelief. They were just like statues, just looking. And then by Lord Nityananda's inspiration, one of the parents remembered, "I saw a drama one time when Lakshman fell dead, apparently dead, on the battlefield. But he was saved by Hanuman." And then Hanuman! He forgot his role. Hanuman! And he remembered that Lord Nityananda told him, "Before I fall dead, don't forget to go get the Gandhamanda on the hill and bring him back and have the Kaviraj restore my life." And Hanuman remembered and he ran off. But that was also beset with so many challenges. The ascetic said, "Oh, please stop and take..." "No, I got too much. Haven't you heard that Lakshman's lying on the..." "But please just..." "No." And he ran off, and then he got, you know, convinced that he should take his bath and take a little snack on the way. So he went to take his bath, and a crocodile pulled him under, and he pulled the crocodile out by the hair. It's one of his friends, and beat him up. And then the hermitage of the sage became a mighty rakshasa. "You may have defeated the crocodile, but I will devour you." And then he beat him up. "I don't care about your Ravana, he's a dog." And then he ran off and got the mountain and brought it back. And then the doctor remembered his part. He took the herb and he placed it under Nitai's nose, and his lotus eyes fluttered. And they said, "Jai Nitai!" They all came back to life as if from the dead. And then at that point, they had to ask him, "How have you learned these leelas?" I mean, he heard it in the town, but never to such detail as it was enacted. "How have you learned these parts so perfectly?" He just smiled. "This is my eternal Leela." What does that mean? And then they came to feel that what they were going through and what they called their everyday daily lives was actually a play. And Nityananda's play was the eternal reality. So this went on for 12 years. When everyone in Ekachakra was continually immersed in the pastimes of Lord Krishna and Sri Ram. And then on one fateful day, one wandering mendicant, sannyasi, very effulgent, very saintly soul, came to the house of Hadai Pandit, who was very happy to receive such a sadhu in his home. And they spent that day and night deeply immersed in the joy of Krishna Katha. And then when the sannyasi was about to leave, and Hadai Pandit wanted to offer some charity, the sannyasi actually volunteered, "There is one thing I would like to request of you." "Yes, whatever." "I'm traveling to all the holy places, but I could not find a suitable companion. So I would like to ask you for your son. I will serve him with more love than I have for my own life. And he will attain the benefit of going on all the places of pilgrimage." And Hadai Pandit was shocked. And his mind just became so afflicted with grief. And his mind was just reeling and reviewing the situation. "What have I done? I said I would offer him anything in charity. I would happily give my life, but he's asked for more than my life." He said, "I'm just a body." Hadai Pandit was thinking, "I'm just this body. Nityananda is the life. This sannyasi is going to take my life and leave just my material body." And he was reflecting, "But what to do?" And he asked his wife. And she said, "My Lord, whatever is your desire, I support." Such a chaste lady. And then he was reflecting very deeply that in the past, many great personalities have attained the perfection of life by giving their life. And he was thinking, what came to mind immediately was King Dasarath. When Vasishtha Muni came and asked for his sons, it was like giving up his life. But he did it as service to the sadhu. So he was reflecting, "By providence, I have become Dasarath. And this sannyasi is like Vishwamitra, who is asking me for my life." But in this case, it was different, because Lakshman did not come home. He never came home. So Hadai Pandit, with his head lowered in grief and disbelief, holding Nitai by the hand, turned him over to that sannyasi, and they immediately departed without saying a word. And Hadai Pandit was truly like a body without a soul. He became like a statue, just watching in the distance as Nitai and the sannyasi disappeared into the over the horizon. He just stood watching for 3 months without eating, drinking, or sleeping. And everyone was thinking he's become like a ghost. But his life was sustained by Nityananda, by love for Nityananda. And after 3 months, he just crumbled. So, the obvious question is, how could such a merciful Lord put his most loving servitors through such an ordeal and take away their very lives and souls? And the answer given by Vrindavan Das Thakur is that it's for the sake of this fallen world. And he gives the example of Ramayana, where by hearing of the grief that Dasarath felt when Ram and Lakshman left him for good, not the time they went with Vishwamitra Muni, the time that they went into banishment, into exile. Hearing of the piteous cries and grief of Dasarath would melt even the most stone-like hearts of Yavanas and Malechas. So it is his compassion upon this world that he would put his own most dear loving servitors to such a sacrifice simply for the upliftment of this degraded world. So then, Lord Nityananda, at the time 12 years of age, traveled to all the holy places in Bharatvarsha in the company of this sannyasi. And it was a repeat of his former pilgrimage as Lord Balaram, when he was unable to tolerate the fighting between the different families in the battle of Kurukshetra. He couldn't tolerate it. He couldn't tolerate hearing about it, being in the proximity, and he just left on pilgrimage. So, following a similar course as in his previous lila, he went to all the holy places in Bharatvarsha. When he came to Mathura, he became especially emotional. And arriving at Nandagram, he sat down on the ground in what would be the courtyard of Nanda Maharaj. And he was just feeling the textures of the walls and thinking about his friends and Rasalila. And then he couldn't stay for very long. He had to continue. He met Lord Shiva and Parvati, and Parvati was able to cook for Nitai, while Nitai and Lord Shiva were immersed in very deep topics for many days. He went to Badrik Ashram, where Vyasadeva recognized his own Ishtadev, Balaram, and paid his respects. He visited the assembly of the Buddhists, and he asked them some questions, and they didn't answer because they were in samadhi, and he kicked them in the heads and they ran away. Now this is very, very essential aspect of mercy. Srila Prabhupada also said in the Mood of Balaram regarding the scientists, the key mantra was scientists, if anybody ever wanted to witness this lila. And Prabhupada just mentioned that mantra, scientist, and Prabhupada would become infused with the Mood of Balaram and say, I will kick them in the head with my boots. He said boots. So obviously it's figurative, because Srila Prabhupada never wore boots as far as I know. And Vrindavan Das Thakur, in his lamentation, feeling, I have done everything in my power to convey to this world the necessity to take shelter at the lotus feet of Lord Nityananda, and some are still not doing it. So I kick them in the heads. So that you find this theme continually coming down the line of our acharyas from the original guru, Lord Balaram. And what does it mean? It can be appreciated in different ways. For one thing, if anybody ever got kicked in the head by Lord Nityananda's lotus feet or Srila Prabhupada's boots, they would be likely to receive a particle of that golden dust which infuses the heart with bhakti. But Vrindavan Das Thakur was also thinking, and if somehow that doesn't work, then just by me saying such an uncultured line, then Lord Nityananda will have special mercy upon them. Because I'm thinking in this way, which is so invasive, then Lord Nityananda will have special mercy upon them. Well, anyway, in the course of their pilgrimage in the south, while wandering through the forest, in his usual playful, childlike, joyful manner, Lord Nityananda obtained the darshan of Madhavendra Puri, and vice versa. Madhavendra Puri, with his illustrious disciples like Brahmananda Bharati and many others, who found it just unbearable to live in society which was so permeated with aversion to Krishna Bhakti, they just went to the forest. Madhavendra Puri, who had such illustrious disciples as Advaitacharya and Ishwara Puri, was wandering in delirium through the forest. His body was like the playground of Krishna. He was so infused with love for Krishna that simply seeing a dark cloud in the sky, he would fall on the ground, seeing his beloved Lord Shyamasundara. And then when Nitai, whose body is the playground for Lord Gauranga, saw Madhavendra, they just both fell on the ground crying such tears that Mother Earth herself felt especially blessed to be soaked with the tears which were flowing profusely from their eyes. And all the disciples of Madhavendrapuri were so imbued with love of Krishna. And when they came back to consciousness and embraced, Lord Krishna appeared in the body of Madhavendrapuri. Lord Gauranga appeared in the body of Nitai. And all the disciples were just so infused with hope and love. And no one could count the passing of days as they just wandered in the forest deeply, finding so much solace and relief from the agony of material life in a world which at that time was so infected with aversion to Krishna. They found total relief and joy in just their wanderings through the forest, lost in contemplation and talks and songs of Krishna's holy names, glories, and pastimes. And when it came time for Nitai to proceed alone, because at this time the sannyasi had already vanished someplace as mysteriously as it appeared in Ekachakra. When it came time that they had to part ways, just in order to preserve their lives from what would have been the anguish of separation from one another, Krishna made them so oblivious to their own bodies and the world and whatever was transpiring that they didn't even realize. They were so immersed in the pastimes of Krishna that they became oblivious to the fact that at a certain point they parted ways, which was necessary for Lord Nityananda to proceed on his pilgrimage. Of course, he commented that now my pilgrimage to all the holy places has borne fruit inasmuch as I've had this sight of the personification of all the holy places. Because he considered Madhavendrapuri his guru, in one sense. But his actual Diksha guru was Lakshmipati Tirtha. Now, in consideration of Lakshmipati Tirtha, who was a Balaram Bhakta, who was given to intense active dreams about Lord Balaram, and was always crying in separation from Balaram. And Lakshmipati Tirtha's illustrious disciple, Madhavendrapuri, whose disciple was Ishwarapuri, the guru of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there's a very wonderful phenomena transpiring in the Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya from the time of Lakshmipati Tirtha to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because Srila Prabhupada states in his purports in Chaitanya Charitamrita that ecstatic love of Krishna in the mood of the Brijabasis with emphasis on Srimati Radharani did not exist in the Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya until the time of Madhavendrapuri. He's the one who introduced that concept. So then the natural question would be, well, where did he get it from? But as Narottam Das Thakur says, and in honor of that reality, one cannot attain the shelter of Radha and Krishna without the mercy of Lord Nityananda.